Well, good morning. This is Chair Rena Moran. Pursuant to House Rule 10.01, I call this remote meeting of the House Ways and Means Committee for March 14, 2022 to order. Ms. Anna, until I, could you please do the roll for attendance?
Chair Moran.
Present.
Vice Chair Olson.
Present.
Representative Garofalo.
Present.
Representative Albright.
Present.
Hi, everybody.
Representative Becker Finn. Representative Bernardi.
He's been excused.
Representative Eklund.
Present.
Representative Hansen.
Present.
Representative Hassan. Representative Hertaz.
Hertaz present.
Representative Hornstein.
Hornstein present.
Representative Johnson.
Present.
Representative Kreshaw.
Present.
Representative Liebling.
Liebling present.
Representative Lilly.
Lilly will be late.
Representative Mariani. Representative Marquardt. Representative Miller. Representative Nash.
Present.
Representative Nelson.
Present.
Representative Knorr. Representative O'Neill.
O'Neill present.
Representative Pulaski.
Pulaski present.
Representative Petersburg.
Petersburg present.
Representative Pinto.
Present.
Representative Schumacher.
Schumacher present.
Representative Schultz.
Present.
Representative Scott.
Here.
Representative Sundin.
Sundin present.
Madam Chair, a quorum is present.
Norbert present.
Becker Miller is also present.
And so is Miller. Miller is present.
Representative Bernardi present.
Hassan is here.
All right, beautiful. So the next item on the agenda is approval of the minutes from our hearing on March the 1st. The meetings, the minutes were included in the hearing documents emailed to you by the committee staff. Are there any questions or corrections on the minutes? If not, Vice Chair, we'd like to motion to approve the minutes.
So moved, Madam Chair.
Representative Olson moves approval of the minutes for March the 1st, 2022. Please unmute briefly for a voice vote. All in favor of approving the minutes, say aye.
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 All opposed? Aye. Great. The motion prevails and the minutes are approved. Well, members, before we get into the bills on the agenda today, I'd like to introduce and welcome my new committee staff. As we know, Laura is no longer with us. And Anna, pronounce your last name for us.
It is Borgerding.
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 Borgerding. So Anna is joining us as our committee legislative assistant. And most recently, she was a CLA for the Judiciary Finance and Civil Law Committee. So she's ready to hit the ground running, which she's already done. I am happy to have her join our team. So welcome, Anna. And we all look forward to working with you. Okay, we have four bills on the agenda today, so let's get started. Let's see here. The first bill up is Senate File 2876. This is the companion to House File 2914, which we received from the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. We're working from the Senate file since it came to us from the floor. To get the bill before the committee, and the chair moves that Senate File 2876 be recommended for placement on the general register. There is also an author's amendment to get the bill in the shape she'd like to present it. So I will move that S-2876-A1-3 amendment. Welcome to the committee, Chair Schultz. Please tell us about your amendment.
Thank you, Chair Moran and members. The A13 amendment is an amendment to get the bill in order with an agreement from the Senate. So initially, we had agreed with the Senate to not have amendments on this waiver bill, which is somewhat urgent. So the amendment deletes Section 2, which relates to the 14C language of the task force. And it deletes Section 3, which relates to the EMS ambulance services language, which is being worked on in a separate bill by Chair Liebling and Representative Hewitt. And then it cleans up language that had been amended on the House file bill in the Human Services Finance Committee related to allowing the use of video conferencing for foster care visits under certain circumstances. And then it cleans up some dates. That's what the amendment does, and I'd be happy to talk about the bill after we adopt the amendment.
All right. Are there any questions on the A13 amendment? Okay. Seeing no further questions, the
Madam Chair.
Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
To the A13 amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, this is an amendment that has been thoroughly vetted, and I would encourage members' approval of the amendment in order to get the bill in the shape that we would all want it going forward. Thank you.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Schultz, just confirming that the revised fiscal note that we saw online, that matches with the this amendment.
Representative Chair Schultz.
Thank you, Chair Moran. I think I'm not sure the date of that fiscal note that's posted on the website, the committee website, but the amendment does not change the appropriation.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so with the changes that are being made, though, wouldn't we be able, I just want to make sure the fiscal note we're using matches the bill as you intended to have it be moving forward. If we could.
Yes.
My understanding is with the amendment you're offering, you're actually deleting some costs. Isn't that correct?
No. Chair Schultz. So, Mr. Burge.
Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo and members, the fiscal note for the Senate file is accurate at this point, including with the author's amendment. She's deleting some language that does not have a cost either to the, if it's there or not there. The only costs in this bill are for the temporary staffing pool, which the bill appropriates $1,029,000. There is a $329,000 federal offset, which results in a net cost of $700,000, which is reflected in the Senate fiscal note, and the author's amendment does not change that.
Thank you. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you to staff. And thank you, Representative Schultz.
Okay. Do we have any other questions? I don't see any. So seeing no further questions, the S-2876-A1-3 amendment is before us. Please unmute your microphone. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed say nay. The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. So no other amendments were pre-filed, so the bill as amended is before us. Chair Schultz, please tell us about your bill with a focus on the fiscal component.
Okay, so the fiscal component of this bill is the temporary emergency staffing pool that will help congregate care settings like nursing homes, assisted living facilities, group homes. They are closed. Some of the group homes, as you've heard, are closing because they don't have staff to staff their clients. And this would create an emergency staffing pool, which we've used in the past, where we would contract with a vendor and they would hire staff at no cost to these providers, these organizations. And it would fund it through June of this year. And that is the a little bit over $1 million appropriation that's included in this bill. The other language has been vetted in other committees related to certain waivers that we've used during the emergency to deal with COVID and filling out forms and giving more flexibility to hospitals and nursing facilities. and then giving more flexibility around reimbursement to childcare for childcare assistance. But the appropriation relates to the emergency staffing pool. And this has been agreed on by the Senate. So we hope to send this to the floor and then have the Senate concur.
All right, thank you. Are there any questions? Let's see. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And for Representative Schultz, thank you for carrying this bill and for working with the Senate on an agreement. Now, I've kind of had a bright line on bills this year that I'd like to see us be using the federal funds that are available before we start dipping into the general fund. I think there's probably a unique story that you have on this bill about why you're using the general fund instead of the federal funds. You want to maybe kind of enlighten the committee on that choice that you made?
Sure. So initially the House bill, thank you, Chair Moran. Initially the House bill was using federal funds, but the Senate has spent all of their federal funds. So we have to use general fund appropriations in order for the Senate to concur with this bill and get it to the governor on time.
Mm. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so again, because I've made a commitment on avoiding using the general fund, I won't be voting yes today, but I do understand that that's a decision that really, as much as I'd like to blame you, Representative Schultz, we really can't blame you for that. So I expect members of our side will be voting differently on this, but I'll be voting no today. Thank you, Representative Schultz.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I do have a question on, I believe it's Section 6 that allows for payment of CCAP dollars even when the children aren't being served in those settings. Are there any concerns with this allowance, especially in light of the child care fraud facilities in past years? Why are we funding this when those children are present?
Chair Schultz.
Thank you, Chair Moran.
Madam Chair, I'm happy to take this.
Yep, I think I will defer to Chair Pinto, please.
Okay, Chair Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Scott, for the question. So that section simply continues waivers that were in place throughout the pandemic. And the issue is that with quarantines and staff issues, you've got children who may for a given day not be able to be present because of the public health emergency. This was in place for quite a while. And I'll note that these two provisions related to child care passed through the Early Childhood Committee with unanimous support. Have support in the other body as well. And the basic point is that we have this unusual circumstance where kids may need to be out for a brief period of time. We want to make sure that our the providers of childcare are able to continue to stay open. But so it has been thoroughly vetted and has, I say, received strong support from both sides. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Pinto, Chair Pinto. So are you telling me that there are still quarantine guidelines in place, pandemic quarantine guidelines in place still in our daycares?
Chair Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so Representative Scott, the issue is actually a little bit less going forward and somewhat that you'll notice that it applies retroactively. This is something that was in place for quite a while, and there was a lot of effort last fall to attempt to continue it. Both sides, I think if we'd had a special session, it may well have occurred at that point. And so it's less about the public health. You'll notice, by the way, that it then ends in June. So this is not something which is only a couple months away, of course. So this is more that issue. And I also want to note for this committee that there is no cost to this. These are funds that have already been allocated. And so there's no fiscal impact. Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Scott.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So wouldn't federal dollars have covered this? If there's no fiscal cost, is it because the federal dollars are taking care of that? Or did we appropriate general funds to take care of this during the pandemic?
Chair Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Scott. So, this program does receive substantial federal funding, and so a lot of the dollars may well be federal, though they wouldn't be the COVID-related dollars. Those are just the basic dollars to fund the program. And so the answer is that during the course of the pandemic, there was this waiver in place so that If there are children who couldn't be present for a given period of time because perhaps the, you know, the quarantine shutdown, whatever it is, the idea is that the funds could continue to be paid, just the basic funds. This is not something that was like a special program set up by the state or funded by special federal dollars. This is simply the program itself saying that there's going to be a little more flexibility. And of course, the public health emergency was in place for quite a while. And again, it's received strong support all the way across the board.
So Representative Scott.
Thanks, Madam Chair. And I appreciate you allowing me to ask questions on this, because I'm just getting information here from our staff that there's not peace in the valley on this provision with the Senate. I can't vote for this bill with that in there. And for the reasons that Representative Garofalo gave. But thank you for letting me ask the question.
Yeah, thank you. And again, there is no fiscal impact to the bill for this provision.
Madam Chair, may I?
Go ahead, Chair Pinto.
Thank you. And I'll just note, and Representative Scott, I will connect. It was my understanding that, in fact, there was support quite a while back, and agreement and peace in the valley on this. The Senate had there was some language, some technical language that was worked out by the other body that was fine with me. And so I will certainly look into this, because my understanding and corresponding directly with the author over there was that there's full agreement. So I'm surprised by that, and I will certainly look into it. But my understanding is that there is full support.
Sure. So would you like to respond to this?
Thank you, Chair Moran. This is the Senate language that was worked out with the Senate. It has passed off the Senate floor. So this language has been agreed to by the Senate. And I will also say that Minnesota is a national leader, and other states are looking to us on how we financially help our child care centers. And so other states are following our lead in using this language.
Thank you. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Chair. I just have a really quick question regarding the amendment that we just adopted. You're removing the changes to the task force and subminimum wage for those with disabilities. Is that in some other bill somewhere else? How are you dealing with that? Because I know that that's an incredibly big issue in my district, as I have a lot of people with disabilities that have different group homes in different settings.
Here's some thoughts.
Last year we agreed to create a task force to look at phasing out the 14C language, which allows providers to pay subminimum wage to people with disabilities. Most states are moving away from that. The federal government will soon be adopting language to not allow this. So we provided funding from the Home and Community-Based Services Fund, federal dollars, to help providers if they so wish to work with providers who have phased it out. So there's a pool of money available, but it's just, we'll just get recommendations from this task force. It will not affect legislation or the ability to pay subminimum wage, just recommendations moving forward. And Senator Abler and I, along with others, will be working on in a separate legislation if we need to make changes to that task force. But that will be in a separate bill because it's more controversial, and we need to get this off the floor as soon as possible, this waiver bill.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Schultz. That's exactly what I was wondering. I knew it was incredibly controversial, and now I understand why you're getting it out of this bill. Mm-hmm. Good luck going forward. Thanks.
Thank you. Are there any further questions? Representative Hertaus.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Schultz. My question kind of segues a little bit off of Representative Scott's question. It has to do with the payments to the child care centers for 8 additional weeks, even if children were not present. Is there a cap on that payment in terms of total amount? Because it would seem difficult for me to accept the idea that all the children were missing and that all the payments are made, whatever number of children that would be in the child care center, and that it would be for 8 weeks. So could you elaborate a little bit on, you know, is there a cap per child care provider for total payments, or is this kind of an open door?
So I think, is that maybe a Chair Pinto question?
Chair Pinto, please.
Chair Pinto.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Hirtosh. Representative Hirtosh, I don't believe that there is a maximum, and I may need to have staff assist me with this and just verifying. But it's but again, this is the practice that was in place for a year and a half, I believe, is the case. But I'm not sure if there's we may have somebody on who can assist me with this as I'm just verifying. But and I think if we could have DHS on, I believe perhaps we can have them help answer that, Madam Chair.
Do we have someone from DHS who can respond to Representative Hirtosh's question? Matt Murdock or Lisa?
Yes, Madam Chair, Matt Murdock with the Department of Human Services. Representative Hirtosh, would you mind just repeating the question? Just want to make sure I have it correct.
Thank you for that question. What I was trying to get at is there a maximum cap per child care provider that is going to be paid in relief because of COVID, despite the number of children that were there or are not? I guess it's kind of vague when you talk about, you know, payments, you know, limited up to 8 weeks per child, but it doesn't say how many children were in that facility and whether or not this is necessary in terms of the amount of dollars that might be paid. It's kind of hard to put a handle on the cost of that.
So, Mac Burdick, you can respond to that, but I want us to remind us as around to the fiscal piece of this committee that this has no impact at all on the fiscal note. It does not. So, Matt Burdick, we're going to do this, and I think we're going to go to a vote. We have our Representative Liebling also. Matt, can you please respond?
Certainly, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Hirtosh. No, there's not a cap in the way you described. The way the bill language is written does kind of lay out the parameters under which this provision can be used. And as the Chair noted and others have noted, there is not a fiscal impact because the costs of paying for these days of child care service are accounted for in the forecast. And so it's really just making sure that those payments can continue when providers are unable to have children in the classroom on those days.
Representative Hirtosh.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Mr. Burdick, for that explanation. I just find it difficult to believe that we need to do that, whether it's in the fiscal note or not. There's been plenty of other COVID monies available to support these facilities and institutions that are providing this service. And given the amount of CCAP and child care fraud that has happened in the past, I guess I would have concern over this issue, and I'm not going to support the bill.
All right, Chair Liebling, would you okay?
Yeah, just quickly, Madam Chair, I know you want to get to the vote here, and I just wanted to actually, Representative Hirtosh kind of hit on it at the end. The purpose of this, as I understand it, is to keep these facilities from going out of business at a time that was incredibly difficult for them. And keeping childcare in business is an incredibly important, I hate to keep using the word incredibly, but it is so important to our state. We can't have people working if they don't have childcare. So I think this is just a common sense thing to do and just encourage everyone to support it.
Well, thank you. Seeing no further discussion, any closing comment, Chair Schultz?
I hope members will support this bill because it is really needed by many providers, especially our congregate care settings, and they will be very grateful for the emergency staffing pool.
Thank you. So the motion that Senate File 2876 be recommended for placement on the general register is before us. Ms. Anna, please take the roll.
Chair Moran.
Aye.
Moran, aye. Vice Chair Olson.
Aye.
Olson, aye. Representative Garofalo.
Garofalo, no.
Garofalo, no. Representative Albright.
Aye.
Albright, aye. Representative Becker-Finn.
Aye.
Becker-Finn, aye. Representative Bernardi. Representative Bernardi.
So Bernardi has been excused, Anna.
Representative Bernardi, excused. Representative Eklund.
Aye.
Eklund, aye. Representative Hansen.
Aye.
Hansen, aye. Representative Hassan?
Hassan, aye.
Hassan, aye. Representative Hertas?
Hertas, no.
Hertas, no. Representative Hornstein?
Hornstein, aye.
Hornstein, aye. Representative Johnson?
Yeah, we start at 10 o'clock.
Johnson, no.
Johnson, no. Representative Kreshaw?
Kreshaw, no.
Kreshaw, no. Representative Liebling?
Liebling, aye.
Liebling, aye. Representative Lilly?
Lilly, aye.
Lilly, aye. Representative Mariani? Representative Marquardt?
Marquardt, aye.
Marquardt, aye. Representative Miller?
Miller, no.
Miller, no. Representative Nash?
Nash, no.
Nash, no. Representative Nelson?
Nelson, aye.
Nelson, aye. Representative Noor?
Noor, aye.
Noor, aye. Representative O'Neill?
O'Neill, no.
O'Neill, no. Representative Pawlowski?
Pawlowski, aye.
Pawlowski, aye. Representative Petersburg?
Petersburg, no.
Petersburg, no. Representative Pinto?
Pinto, aye.
Pinto, aye. Representative Schumacher?
No.
Schumacher, no. Schumacher, no. Representative Schultz?
Aye.
Representative Schultz, aye. Representative Scott?
No.
Representative Scott, no. Representative Sundin?
Sundin, aye.
Sundin, aye. So that is 17 ayes and 10 nays.
So there have been 17 ayes, and how many nays was there again? 8?
10 nays.
10 nays. The motion prevails in Senate File 2876 as amended. Is recommended for placement on the general register. Thank you, Chair Schultz. So we're going to move on to House File 3717, Chair Stevenson. So our next bill started in Commerce, but came to us from the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. To get it before the committee, the chair moves that House File 3717 be recommended for placement on the general register. There's also an author's amendment to get the bill in the shape that he would like to present it. So I will move the H3717A19 amendment. Welcome to the committee, Chair Stevenson. Please tell us about your amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. The A19 makes two changes to the bill. First, it increases in the appropriation to the Healthcare Access Fund from $42 million to about $110 million upon getting more information in the fiscal note. This is the correct amount. The second change is it adds about $4 million from the general fund to fund some study language that was added in the Health Finance Committee. I can, I'll withhold further comment on the substance of the bill until we adopt the amendment, but this just gets the bill in the shape I'd like the committee to consider it, and I'd ask for support.
Any questions on the A19 amendment? Seeing no further questions, the A19 amendment is before us. Please unmute your mic. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed say nay. The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. There is no additional amendments that were filed, so the bill as amended is before us. Please continue your presentation, Chair Stevenson. With a focus
Thank you, Madam Chair.
On the fiscal component.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. This bill reauthorizes the reinsurance program, which is designed to hold down premium increases in the individual and small group insurance market by having government pay some of the costs of care that would otherwise be paid for by insurance companies. Reinsurance was created 5 years ago. It was claimed to be a bridge program designed to help consumers while a more lasting solution could be found. We're 5 years later, and we have not come up with a workable alternative. DFLers have routinely supported allowing people to buy into the very popular, very effective, and affordable Minnesota Care program, but this has been opposed at every turn. With the original 5 years of the program having run out, we have a choice to make. Do we walk away from the reinsurance program, seeing premiums suddenly increase? The federal government has been paying premium costs about 7% of income for all enrollees, which makes health insurance premiums more affordable, but that protection is set to expire. With inflation at a four-decade high, with COVID still a threat, and with extra premium subsidies set to expire, now is not the time to leave consumers without protection. Families are hurting. We should do everything we can to keep them protected from sudden cost hikes. This bill reauthorizes reinsurance, but also corrects some of the most substantial flaws in the original program. First, reinsurance has hurt MinnesotaCare. The federal government diverts funds that would otherwise allocate to MinnesotaCare to help private insurers keep premiums artificially low. This bill makes sure that practice ends and holds MinnesotaCare harmless. That is the $110 million appropriation that we just amended in the A-19. Second, the bill has important measures to control out-of-pocket costs for consumers. Keeping down premiums isn't enough. Deductibles and copays are also hurting families. Last, we know that reinsurance is not the long-term solution. Everyone has agreed that this is a bridge program. So we just added $4 million to the bill to study what comes after reinsurance. And with that, Madam Chair, I'm happy to take questions on the bill.
Thank you, Chair Stevenson. So a completed fiscal note was provided for reference. Are there questions? I see Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Stevenson, the fiscal note shows a $31.8 million general fund impact. As you stated, this is reflected in your amendment. Can you discuss for me this interaction with the MinnesotaCare, the $113 million? I'm not familiar with how that works, and if it's a complicated answer, we can talk offline. But can you just explain again what it is that it's being what penalty the federal government imposes on us and why?
Chair Stevenson.
Absolutely, Madam Chair. Representative Garofalo, excellent question. So under the reinsurance program, the federal government contributes to reinsurance for the premium security fund an amount. It's usually, it fluctuates from year to year. I believe that in the fiscal note, there's an assumption that it'll be in excess of $70 million, close to $80 million a year. A portion of that funding they withhold from funding that they would otherwise give to MinnesotaCare. So a way to think about this is that money that would normally go into the Healthcare Access Fund to fund the BHP or MinnesotaCare gets diverted instead to reinsurance. We are the only state that has that's operating reinsurance where this type of penalty occurs. And actually, Congresswoman Craig had a provision in the Build Back Better program to fix this so that Minnesota would no longer be penalized for operating a reinsurance program. Obviously, that has yet to become law.
Representative Garofalo,
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Stevenson. As I mentioned before, I kind of have a bright line on general fund impact right now, given the status of, you know, over $1.5 billion of unexpended federal funds. Representative Stevenson, do you know, would those federal funds be eligible to cover the general fund impact there in this bill?
Chair Stevenson.
Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo, I'm sorry, I don't know.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Stevenson, thank you. There's some other policy stuff that's in this bill. I respect this is a finance committee, so I'm not going to highlight that. I will be voting no on this, but I do want to thank Representative Stevenson for moving the ball forward on reinsurance, and this is definitely something that needs to be addressed by the end of the session. Thank you.
All right. I'm not seeing any other questions. So seeing no further discussion, any closing comment, Chair Stevenson, before you vote?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members of the committee. I encourage a yes vote on the bill.
Thank you. So the motion and House File 3717 as amended be recommended for placement on the general register is before us. Ms. Anna, please take the roll.
Chair Moran.
Aye.
Chair Moran, aye. Vice Chair Olson.
Aye.
Olson, aye. Representative Garofalo.
Garofalo, no.
Garofalo, no. Representative Albright.
No.
Albright, no. Representative Becker-Finn.
Aye.
Becker Finn, aye. Representative Bernardi, excused. Representative Eklund?
Aye.
Eklund, aye. Representative Hansen?
Aye.
Hansen, aye. Representative Hassan?
Hassan, aye.
Hassan, aye. Representative Hertas?
That's no.
Hertas, yep, no. Fine. Representative Hornstein?
Hornstein, aye.
Hornstein, aye. Representative Johnson?
Johnson, no.
Johnson, no. Representative Crenshaw?
Crenshaw, no.
Crenshaw, no. Representative Liebling?
Liebling, aye.
Liebling, aye. Representative Lilly?
Lilly, aye.
Lilly, aye. Representative Mariani? Representative Marquardt?
Marquardt, aye.
Marquardt, aye. Representative Miller?
Miller, no.
Miller, no. Representative Nash?
Nash, no.
Nash, no. Representative Nelson?
Nelson, aye.
Nelson, aye. Representative Noor?
Noor, aye.
Noor, aye. Representative O'Neill?
O'Neill, no.
O'Neill, no. Representative Pulaski?
Pulaski, aye.
Pulaski, aye. Representative Petersburg?
Petersburg, no.
Petersburg, no. Representative Pinto?
Pinto, aye.
Pinto, aye. Representative Schumacher?
You cannot find those out in the marketplace unless...
Representative Schumacher?
So.
Schumacher, no. Representative Schultz?
Aye.
Schultz, aye. Representative Scott?
No.
Scott, no. And Representative Sundin?
Sundin, aye.
Sundin, aye. So that is 16 ayes and 11 nays.
So there have been 16 ayes and 11 nays. The motion prevails. House File 3717, as amended, is recommended for placement on the general register. Thank you, Chair Stevenson. So our third bill on the agenda started in the Labor Committee, but came to us from Judiciary, Finance, and Civic Law. The chair moves that House File 2774 be recommended for placement on the general register. There's an author's amendment to get the bill in the shape that Representative Greenman would like to present it. I will move H2774A6 amendment. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Greenman, Representative Greenman. Please tell us about your amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, this is an author's amendment that reflects, does three things. The first is it reflects feedback we've had raising the threshold of warehouses covered from 100 workers to 250 workers per site. It consolidates and eliminates duplicative language authorizing civil action. And then appropriate to this committee, it adds an appropriation of $76,000 for fiscal year 2023, and then sets the base funding for fiscal year 2024 and thereafter at $50,000.
All right. Are there any questions on the A6 amendment? Seeing no further questions, the H2774A6 amendment is before us. Please unmute your microphone. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. No other amendment were pre-filed, so the bill as amended is before us. Representative Greenman, tell us about your bill with a focus on the fiscal component.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. The fiscal cost of this bill relates to MNOSHA's staffing costs to administer and enforce the provision. And so I'll give you a little bit of background on why this new standard and Minnesota OSHA's enforcement is necessary. This bill is a worker safety bill that requires big warehouse companies to notify their workers of any quotas they're expected to meet and to provide those workers with access to the data, their own data, that they're from performing those quotas. The policy is in response to worker experiences and reported data out of Minnesota Amazon warehouses that show a model where workers are working at a relentless pace under intense electronic surveillance and threat of discipline. Workers are pushing themselves to the brink to meet these quotas and time off task measures that are often changing and sometimes not even disclosed to workers. This model is creating an injury rate that's double the injury rate of that we see in non-Amazon warehouses in Minnesota and four times the average industry rate in private industry generally. This bill responds to that worker safety problem by doing two things. It requires warehouse companies to notify their workers of any quotas they'll be disciplined or fired if they fail to meet, and then allows those workers to request access to that data. It gives Department of Labor and Industry the ability to enforce these provisions and ensures that the warehouse workers have the tools to enforce the rights themselves. The cost of this bill is $76,000 in fiscal year 2023 and $50,000 each year after, and reflects the staff time that MNOSHA requires to administer and enforce the provisions, including 25% of a management analyst's time to evaluate the covered warehouse distribution centers annually to determine if there's an injury rate greater than 30% of the average, 25% of the time of an MNOSHA safety inspector to complete the estimate and enforcement actions. In fiscal year 2023, the appropriation reflects additional work to an analysis for the new program that MNOSHA or the new evaluation and requires 50% of an analyst's time to set up that new evaluation and review process. The appropriation to DLI is appropriated out of the Workers' Compensation Fund. And we also have Deputy Commissioner Nicole Blissenbach in committee if there are additional questions for the agency. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll turn it back over to you.
All right, thank you. So there was a fiscal note that was posted for reference. I see we have a question from Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to the author. In your testimony, you cited specifically one business. In addition, the handout that we have for this committee also cites a specific business. Is there any other companies affected besides this one business?
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Garofalo. It's our understanding that, and what we're responding to, is this innovative model of constantly changing quotas and performance standards. So it's my understanding from talking to workers and others that right now the big warehouses that are not providing information on quota and or performance standards is Amazon, and so that's why that they're the company reference. We are seeing a specific problem there with 1 in 9 workers being injured, and it is twice the standard of the rate of other Minnesota warehouses, and that's the worker safety problem we're trying to deal with.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to the author. So again, would any other companies besides the one you cited be impacted by this legislation?
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Garofalo. It is a standard that is required of any large warehouse that has performance standards or quotas that folks can be disciplined for. It's our understanding that most other warehouses, if not all besides Amazon, are already doing this, and so it wouldn't change the practices.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to the author. So we have a letter that's been supplied to us by many trade associations and groups in Minnesota in opposition to your bill, citing the harm that it would cause to small business. I'm assuming you had an opportunity to read that letter. Is there anything you want to refute in that letter that you would consider to be that you would disagree with, and provide the facts for that? Why?
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Garofalo. And we've had a lot of discussion about this in the other policy committees about the bill and how it does. I would say, and I think a lot of those, I had a chance to talk to both the retailers as well as lobbyists for Amazon. And there's a lot of general comments about there, but what we know is that most warehouses in Minnesota are already adopting standards. We heard from workers from UPS and Cisco, and we know that they're adopting standards that they keep their workers safe, both when it comes to our workforce shortage and when it comes to keeping workers safe. We know that that's good for Minnesota businesses, both small and big. Right now, the turnover rate at Amazon warehouses is 170% higher than the average for other warehouses. The injury rate is 1 in 9. That's not good for our communities. That's not good for the cost of those healthcare costs that are that folks and families are bearing. But it's also not good for our businesses, our business environment. We need to make sure that we have healthy, safe workers, and a common sense notice requirement is something that can do that, and that will provide workers with what they need to keep themselves and their colleagues safe.
So this is really, really good information. And I want to thank Representative Garofalo for asking the questions about the those type of staffing or business questions. But this is the fiscal committee, and my hope is that I won't have many. I see I have 5 more hands up, 4 other hands up, and hopefully it's not entailing these type of questions. I'm going to let Representative Garofalo finish up, and we're going to go into the next person.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Certainly the dramatic restructuring we are seeing of the relationship between government and businesses is does merit a little bit additional conversation. So in the interest of time, I will simply say that I will be opposing this bill and would encourage members to do the same, particularly with the current status of our existing workforce. This is an example of government having very well intentions without the subject matter expertise to run these businesses. I'll be voting no.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to the author of the bill or to the testifiers, it was mentioned in the testimony that there is an injury rate that is now substantially higher than normative, and I'm wondering if what database is she referring to?
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Albright. There was a report done by NELP in, I think it was released in November, December, and we heard testimony on that from those authors in the Labor Committee. I'm happy to get you that report. It was done with a set of databases that I'm not prepared to talk about here, but I can get you that report and all of those citations from where that information and data comes from.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And if the representative or from the Department of Labor and Industry would answer a question, she could corroborate the data and or the increase, and I'm wondering if that relates to any observations from work comp in terms of the claims that have been received from this type of injury.
Real quick, Deputy Commissioner Blissenbach.
Thank you, Chair Moran, Representative Albright. I am not I have read the report that Representative Greenman refers to. I believe the numbers in that report, and I would have to go back and look, but I believe that they are primarily based on OSHA logs. Companies are required to log any injuries that happen in a work site, and I believe that that's where the numbers that support the numbers Representative Greenman mentioned earlier are coming from. The bill itself does, when it talks about the 30% above the average industry rate, that's what would be used for OSHA when doing that analysis as to whether the employer would be covered by that automatic investigation to determine compliance with the sections of this bill.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, I'm really concerned about this bill because so in the amendment that we just passed, it raises it to 250 employees, and yet the author has yet to answer how many companies that actually covers. The fiscal note, I'm sure, was done before this amendment. That's how they're done. So we have no idea how many companies this now covers if you've raised it to 250 employees. We've asked that multiple times. We still have not gotten an answer. So how many businesses does this cover? And are we only targeting Amazon? Is that what we're doing here? And if so, why is OSHA and Dolly not doing their job to go into Amazon and help them move in a direction that is more helpful to the employees? Why are we doing a bill that targets Amazon? And if we're not, how many companies is this actually targeting? It's a very simple question. It's directly related to the fiscal note because obviously we have to pay for state employees to go in and make sure that all these things are being done because of potentially one company. So we're gonna spend all this extra money, but I need to know how many companies after this amendment this actually covers so we know how many employees have to go in to do this work.
Representative Raymond.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative O'Neill, I think you misunderstood my response. In the fiscal note, it says, and the fiscal note actually is reflective, the amendment is reflective of the fiscal note. It says there's 60 distribution centers that fall under the 250 worker category. But that's not individual companies. If you look at the, when I was looking at a list, the top of the 30 top five of them were Amazon. So distribution centers may be owned by the same company, but with this amendment, it'll cover about 60 distribution centers. What I was responding to was the question of how many and which companies are not doing what is currently required in this bill, which is to provide notice to workers of any quotas that they could be disciplined or fired for, and then ensure that if that data is being tracked, that they're provided that. That's the thing that at this point, it's our belief that only Amazon is not providing that data, but any company in that over 60% or those 60 distribution centers, this law would apply to.
Representative O'Neill.
Okay, so you're now applying this to 60 companies because you hadn't said that before. In the fiscal note, it says 221, so that's different than the fiscal note. So why have you had conversations with OSHA, MnOSHA, and with Dolly to find out why they're not going in to change what Amazon is doing to protect employees instead of doing a new state law?
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I believe you're looking at the old fiscal note. The new fiscal note, which I believe should have been posted, it was done yesterday morning, should have that updated. And to the point of we need a new standard. So currently it is not required that companies provide this information of what quotas or standards people are being held to. It seems intuitive. If you're going to expect people to meet a standard, you would assume that, and most companies do, provide that performance standard to workers so that they can meet it. And then if they're not meeting it, be held accountable. That's not the model in Amazon. It's a relatively innovative model that currently our standards don't require that. And so that's why we need a new standard. And that's why this bill is in front of us.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I still don't really see why we're doing basically a bill to target one company when I believe that is Dolly and OSHA's job to make sure that the people that work at Amazon are actually safe. So I don't really see the point of this other than to make things more difficult for the 60 companies. No, we did not get a new fiscal note, so I don't know where that is. But, if we didn't meet at 9 a.m. on a Monday morning when people are trying to get here from Greater Minnesota, maybe we could actually get all that information in front of us. Thank you.
Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And my question is for Commissioner Blissenbach, and I please appreciate a little bit of leeway here, Madam Chair. Commissioner Blissenbach, with an incident rate of 1 in 9 injuries in an employment situation, what kind of injury incident rate would that be?
Deputy Commissioner Blissenbach.
Chair Moran, Representative Eklund, I'm sorry, I'm not going to be able to answer that question. I would need to go back to our OSHA experts within DLI.
Representative Eklund?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Commissioner. That's a tough one, but I want to make the point here. We're injuring people at work. And I believe DLI has been very responsive to taking care of this, but obviously we have a problem. So we need to move forward with this bill, and I thank you, Representative Greenman, for bringing it forward.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Hortas.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Greenman and members. You know, I think we need to be a little mindful when we start using percentages to go down the rabbit hole of need. And in particular, as this fiscal note talks about the facilities and the often mentioned big box fulfillment centers that carry a certain name that begin with the first letter of the alphabet, I am a little concerned that, you know, by virtue of the outstanding job that an entity like this has done to meet the needs of consumers during the time of pandemic and the expansion and the rate in which they're able to bring things to your front door or any other warehouse for that matter, it should be no surprise in my mind that if you're talking about an incident rate that is 30% higher than other warehouses, it would seem to me that may be extrapolated by the sheer numbers of additional employees they have. So expressing per facility a percentage increase over other facilities means nothing to me if, in fact, one facility has 1,000 employees and another one has 100. So I think it's dangerous to be talking about percentages in terms of the need. Furthermore, I would echo the response by Representative O'Neill. All of these facilities are already subject to OSHA compliance and OSHA inspections. And if this is something that needs to be added in terms of to be watchful for in terms of standards, these inspectors can perform that inspection while they're there. We don't need to be adding more people. And lastly, it's troubling to suggest that if we add these additional inspections to these facilities, that it will result in 50% citations. That basically says you know in advance you're going to be issuing citations before you even go there. That's troubling. So this is just a bad bill. Thank you.
Representative Greenman, would you like to respond or go on to the next testifier?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Hartas. I just wanted to respond to one of the points you made, which is we are seeing when you look at UPS and you look at a set of other shipping and distribution companies, they were able to keep their workers safe and provide that kind of service. And so we know it's possible to do this. And I just say on the fiscal note, that is an estimate like all of our fiscal notes are for agencies. And so I think, you know, you need to do an estimate before in order for us to estimate out the cost. But I don't think that that indicates anything other than they're trying to estimate the cost. Thank you.
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I have a question for Commissioner Blissenbach, if I could.
Yes.
Commissioner, thank you, Madam Chair. And Commissioner, you had just mentioned that at DLI, there exist OSHA experts, and I'm intrigued by that because Representative O'Neill brought to light that this likely should fall within the purview of OSHA. If it's a bespoke one-off situation, they should be kind of leading point on this as opposed to us passing legislation to cover one company. So can you tell me, based on your interaction with the OSHA experts at DLI, what has been done liaising between those experts at DLI and OSHA?
Deputy Commissioner Blissenbach.
Yes, thank you, Chair Moran and Representative Nash. So I guess what I can say is there are OSHA standards in place, and those OSHA standards are what are currently enforced by Minnesota OSHA in employers around the state that are covered by those standards. There is not a current standard that does what is outlined in this particular bill that requires employers to provide notice of quotas, that requires certain automatic inspections if an injury rate is a certain times above the industry average. So there is no standard that could be cited for this type of action by an employer at this point in time. So while OSHA can go in and cite things like failure to provide safety data sheets or failure to provide fall protection or similar things like that, this standard creates an additional responsibility for these employers for certain employers in this setting. Similar to how in Minnesota, we have a safe patient handling statute that required a new standard for certain type of employers and certain actions. So that is what this does. OSHA can currently go in and enforce the standards that are on the books, but this would be a new requirement that would help protect employees that are experiencing these quotas and higher injury rates.
Okay, Representative Madam
Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, to the commissioner, deputy commissioner, that wasn't really necessarily the answer that I was seeking. Sorry for the humor there, Madam Chair. Deputy commissioner, the question was, what has OSHA done? What has OSHA weighed in on? And what liaisons have gone back and forth? You didn't answer the question. So I'm going to be voting no on this bill. OSHA deals with this. It's a one-off thing. And I just can't imagine for the life of me why we are going to go down the rabbit hole of taking custom orders to change legislation on companies that we don't feel are compliant or doing the right thing. this is quite unusual. I think that if our side of the aisle were to come up with a piece of legislation that were targeting one particular area, that the criticism would be deafening. So I will be voting no. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thanks for the humor.
So I don't see any further questions, but I would just like to say I want to thank Representative Greenman for bringing this bill forward. And I say that because Amazon profits soared over 220% during a pandemic. You know, and I enjoy seeing those packages come to my house during a pandemic and picking them up. But you know what? It's also important that employees are safe. That's the minimum they can do, is to work to ensure that those are getting those packages off in a very timely manner, that they are being safe. And so I just want to thank Representative Greenman for bringing this bill forward. Do you have any closing comments, Representative Greenman?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members, for the discussion. I would just say to that point, Amazon is very quickly expanding their footprint, and it is a model that we're worried about, if other companies and other big folks adopt, it'll lead to higher injuries across the industry. It's our job to keep workers, ensure that we have laws that keep workers safe. It's good for our economy, it's good for our communities, and that's what this bill does. It establishes a standard that is just about notifying workers any quota or performance standard they'd be held to and ensuring they have access to that data. I just wanted to reground us on what the bill does. Thank you, Madam Chair. And with that, I'd ask you for your vote.
So the motion at House File 27774, as amended, be recommended for placement on the general registers before us. Ms. Anna, please take the roll.
Moran.
Aye.
Moran, aye. Representative Olson.
Aye.
Olson, aye. Representative Garofalo.
Garofalo, no.
Garofalo, no. Representative Albright?
No.
Albright, no. Representative Becker-Finn?
Aye.
Becker-Finn, aye. Representative Bernardi, excused. Representative Eklund?
Aye.
Eklund, aye. Representative Hansen?
Aye.
Hansen, aye. Representative Hassan?
Hassan, aye.
Hassan, aye. Representative Hertas?
Hertas, no.
Hertas, no. Representative Hornstein?
Hornstein, aye.
Hornstein, aye. Representative Johnson? Representative Johnson? Representative Kreshaw?
Kreshaw, no.
Kreshaw, no. Representative Liebling?
Liebling, aye.
Liebling, aye. Representative Lilly?
Lilly, aye.
Lilly, aye. Representative Mariani? Representative Mariani?
Mariani, aye.
Mariani, aye. Representative Marquardt?
Mariani, aye.
Mariani, aye. Representative Marquardt?
Marquardt, aye.
Marquardt, aye. Representative Miller?
Miller, no.
Miller, no. Representative Nash?
Nash, no.
Nash, no. Representative Nelson?
Nelson, aye.
Nelson, aye. Representative Knorr?
No, aye.
Knorr, aye. Representative O'Neill?
No.
O'Neill, no. Representative Pulaski?
Pulaski, aye.
Pulaski, aye. Representative Petersburg?
Petersburg, no.
Petersburg, no. Representative Pinto?
Pinto, aye.
Pinto, aye. Representative Schumacher?
Schumacher, no.
Schumacher, no. Representative Schultz?
Schultz, aye.
Schultz, aye. Representative Scott?
No.
Representative Scott, no. Representative Sundin?
Sundin, aye.
Sundin, aye. And Representative
Johnson, no.
Johnson, no. So that makes 17 ayes and 11 nays.
So there have been 17 ayes and 11 nays. The motion prevails. House File 2774, as amended, is recommended for placement on the general register. Thank you, Representative Greenman. So members, we are on our last bill, which is House Files 41. It's a bill that has been in our committee since last year. Chair, Vice Chair Olson, could you please introduce your bill and move it?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair and members. So House File 41, I actually have a DE amendment. So what this is it will be amending on the House File 7, which is the Earned Sick and Safe Time bill that this committee is familiar with last year.
that moved through labor, state gov, judiciary, ways and means, and passed off the floor. So there's no substantive changes to that bill. And what we're doing here is amending it on to update the dates and the appropriations based on a new fiscal note. So the DE3 that was posted is that House File 7, as mentioned, and then there's an amendment to that that updates more of the information that based on the fiscal note we got on Friday. So if I could move that first, the DE3 and then the A10, and then I can discuss all of the updated dates and appropriations.
Okay, so move. So are there any questions on the, we have the A10 amendment to the DE3 amendment. Are there any questions to that? Seeing no further questions, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment to the amendment is adopted. So the DE3 as amended is before us. Vice Chair Olson, would you like to explain the bill?
Yes, Madam Chair. Should we move the DE3 and then I'll just describe the entirety of the of everything if we adopt the, do the DE3 first, okay, and then it'll be in the shape I'd like to discuss it.
Okay, and I don't think we have any questions before us. So the H41 DE3 amendment as amended is, so we want to vote on that. So any, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Okay, are we good, Vice Chair Olson? So no other amendment were pre-filed. Members, for reference, a fiscal note was posted. We now have the House File 41 as amended before us. So Vice Chair Olson, your presentation, you can move and talk further about the bill itself.
Thank you, Chair Moran, and thank you, members. So this bill is familiar to everybody on this committee from both sitting on this committee last year and likely being on one of the committees that it passed through. And so the one thing that hasn't changed since then is that we still have about 36% of working people in Minnesota, which is about 932 Minnesotans, who don't have access to a single paid sick or safe day off. And that was even during a pandemic. And so we've learned a lot more as time has passed with the Earned Sick and Safe Time being enacted in three cities, Duluth, Minneapolis, and St. Paul. And we see those learnings continue to be updated in the way the fiscal note was brought forward, where we have more clarity around cost and actually is costing less this time in this fiscal note to implement than because of what we've learned in these three cities. So I'll walk through the appropriations as they have changed in this bill from last year, as well as the dates as mentioned. And so based on the new fiscal note, we have an appropriation of $1,367,000 in fiscal year 23 and $2,018,000 in fiscal year 24 for the Department of Labor and Industry. And that funds the education and outreach staff to develop trainings and materials to ensure that the employers, employees, and HR companies are ready to start earning sick and safe time. It funds investigators and administrative support staff, one-time rulemaking cost, and updates the existing labor standards case management system. And the base for DLI going forward is $1,708,000. It also has a $51,000 appropriation in fiscal year 23 for enterprise costs across the agencies and base for 2024 and beyond at $102,000. Next, based on the best practices learned from other states and localities, including Minneapolis, Duluth, and St. Paul, there is a $300,000 appropriation in each fiscal year for grants to community organizations to do education and outreach to workers and businesses. There's a $3,000 appropriation to MMB in fiscal year 23 for printing costs to meet the notice and posting requirements for state employees. In fiscal year 23, there is an $18,000 appropriation from the general fund to the House of Representatives to modify time card and human resource systems. And there's an appropriation for the Supreme Court for $1,000 in fiscal year 23 and a base of $92,000 in 24 and $459,025, providing so that the Supreme Court can both provide the benefit to employees and for increased caseload. And so that, Madam Chair, is the updates to the appropriations and dates, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you so much, Vice Chair Olson, for this great clarity on what is happening with the amendments and focusing on the fiscal part of it. Thank you. I see Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And first of all, can you hear me okay? I switched to my headset.
Yes, we can hear you quite well.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Olson, as you mentioned, significant portions of this have already been heard in previous years. I don't think there's much value in us re-debating the concerns I have with it. However, I did want to touch base on a couple of things that have happened since the last time we heard this type of bill in our committee. As you mentioned in your testimony, Minneapolis, St. Paul, as well as Duluth have been taking action on this. And just wondering, given the current state of each of those three cities in unique ways, do you really think that it's good for the state of Minnesota to be modeling its labor policy off of what's being done in Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Duluth?
Vice Chair Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Garofalo. Well, I do know that they're providing a benefit that currently workers throughout Minnesota don't have. And it's crazy to think that you could work your entire life at a job outside of one of these three cities and not earn a single hour off to whether it is to go take care of someone who had COVID, stay home if you had COVID, go get your vaccination. So I think when we're leading the way in a way that, and I'm from Duluth, and I think things are going, you know, all in all pretty well for our employees here and to have this benefit. And I do think that if we're leading, we can continue to lead and show that this is something that all Minnesotans deserve access to.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Olson. No surprise, I have a little different perspective. Many of us do about what's been going on, primarily more in Minneapolis and St. Paul than in Duluth, but that's a separate conversation for a different time. Next question is, and again, things that are new since the last time we debated this. You know, I think it's tomorrow, employers in Minnesota are going to get socked with a multi-billion dollar unemployment insurance tax increase. It's a substantial cost. It's a cost they didn't, you know, they had no choice in paying. Do you have any concerns about hoisting another mandate on employers, especially in light of the fact that we've got a pretty heavy tax increase about to pound every employer in the state of Minnesota?
Representative Olson, you want to respond?
Well, thank you, Chair Moran and Representative Garofalo. So what I'd say to that is I think there's an opportunity to take care of workers and businesses. And this bill is a benefit to employers and employees. We're seeing in places where this is enacted that there's lower presenteeism, where workers aren't going to work sick. They're staying at their jobs. I also sit on the workforce committee where we know we have a worker shortage. And this is one way we can continue to take care of workers and make sure they're working in places by having benefits like this. So I think we can walk and chew gum and do both. And I believe that we need to take care of workers and businesses.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Representative Olson, for those questions. And generally, I subscribe to the walk and chew gum theory at the same time, or same time theory. I generally subscribe to that. But the unemployment insurance tax increase, that's going to go into effect. I mean, the House DFL is on an island on this. Everyone else thinks we should be doing this. Even the Senate DFL, even Tim Walz, it's only the House DFL that is stopping us. So, in fact, it does not appear the House DFL is able to walk and chew gum at the same time, hence the concern I have in this. So hopefully that immediate issue of the tax increases that we are addressing in that. Regarding this bill, as you said before, this is something we have debated in the past. I'm a no vote on this. I would encourage members to vote no as well. And thank you, members of the committee, for listening to me.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is just mainly just kind of a comment because I've heard quite a few times about how, well, people don't get a chance to earn their time off, et cetera. So I want to get us back to really understanding what the word earn means. So when you take on a job, you do a job and earn the compensation for doing that job. One of the things that we've got to realize is that paid time off means the company or whoever the business employer is paying us not to do the job we were hired to earn the compensation that we did. And I think we got to remember that going back into the 60s, when health insurance became available for employees, that was not because government forced it. It was because business needed to compete with other businesses and provide those additional benefits. But it came at a cost. It came at a cost of lower wages and sometimes less people working. But it worked without government intervention. And so if there is a benefit to employees and to then the ultimate employer, as we heard just earlier say, then eventually that will also come to that particular piece. But I want to keep reminding us that paid time off is that. You're paid to stay home. You're paid to do not do the job that the company needs to be done, meaning the company then has to pay for somebody else to do it. So just kind of keep that in mind when we start using the word earned. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Chair Liebling.
Well, thanks, Madam Chair. You know, as the health chair, I just have to weigh in here because honestly, if we don't understand after COVID that one person being able to stay home can mean the health of so many other people, then I don't know where we are. That statement to me just, I wasn't going to weigh in on this conversation, but my goodness, if people can't stay home, you know, there's that image of, I think it was former Representative John Lesh used to talk about, you know, it's the person on the other side of the sneeze guard, right? If they're sick, how can other people be well? I mean, this is just a no-brainer, folks. As a society, people must be able to stay home when they're ill for the health of all of us. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Chair Liebling. I'm not seeing any other questions. So seeing no further discussion, Vice Chair
Madam
Olson.
Chair, Madam yes. Chair, I did have my hand up. I believe staff may have lowered it.
Okay. Who is that? Representative
Nash.
Nash. Okay. Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To the author, I have expressed on every stop that I've been in committee the cost of the software that doesn't exist on this. Can you give us an update on where that is? And I do have other questions, but I would like to talk about the software cost because, as I understand it, there really isn't one that exists at the scale that would need to be done. So if you would.
Vice Chair Olson.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Nash, I could certainly ask DLI specifically. I mean, obviously we've implemented in three cities and three of our, you know, our largest. And so we've been able to do that and it's currently running fine and software has been developed. But if for state agencies you would like to, you could certainly ask DLI, but that is what the appropriations largely are for. For example, the House of Minnesota, you know, House of Representatives, it's a small appropriation just to do some basic time card updates and things like that with the software. So I don't know specifically which, if you're talking about state agencies, businesses, you know, what part, but you could certainly, I think DLI could answer from their perspective on that topic.
Representative Nash, you want to bring us some clarity on?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. And to whomever would like to answer this question, the previous appropriations that, or fiscal notes and local impacts have been in the hundreds of millions of dollars to administer this from a software perspective across the entire state. This doesn't just touch a small and prescriptive group of people. The state would have to be able to monitor this as well, in addition to all the local businesses. So I'm just asking, one, the software I don't believe exists at the scale that is required or would be needed to be done. So yeah, I would love to hear from DLI as to what that is. And Representative Olson, The question still remains, where in your fiscal note is that number? What is that number so that the state can not only administer to its own employees, but also track that compliance across the state? And I still have other questions, Madam Chair.
Okay.
Chair Moran, just to that point, Representative Nash, when you say that 100 million number, I wonder if you're thinking of the paid family and medical leave. I know these bills often get confused. That is a much more complex system. Versus, so I'm wondering if there might be some confusion with that because the fiscal note does specifically say each agency, how they would implement it, what they need in terms of like both employees to implement it, software updates, tracking systems, even down to printing costs of how many flyers they're going to have to flyer to notify employees about the benefit. So in so I do think it is really spelled out in this fiscal note. It's a great fiscal note. It gets better every time in terms of the level of detail. And the amendment that I presented matches the fiscal note, and we appropriated for all of those costs. But when you said that big number, I'm wondering if that might be you're thinking about the complexity around the paid family and medical leave system.
Representative Nash, you have a fiscal note in front of you. Do you have that line by line item in front of you? So your question stands? Okay. So definitely.
And it also comes from a compliance perspective, because there is a compliance note that other employers will have to do. I have seen so many software rollouts, both here at the state and in my private sector job. They almost never go well. They almost never go according to the costs. I'm just trying to figure out, it doesn't appear to me that it's been accounted for. So very briefly answer, and then we'll move on to my other two questions.
So is that a question for Deputy Commissioner Blissenbach or our House fiscal staff? Who can respond to this, to a Representative Nash question? Please just step in.
Chair Moran, Representative Nash, and I'm sorry, my computer froze up.
Deputy Commissioner, yes.
I believe I can, I think if I understand the correct question correctly, what it was what is the cost for the IT system upgrade as it relates to the Department of Labor and Industry? Is that correct?
Representative Nash.
Madam Chair, yes, to a point, but also what are the compliance requirements to employers to follow along with this, since it's going to be pushed across the state? What is the level of interaction that will happen at the state? What are the FTE requirements going to be at the state? Because it's never, and on this one, I am likely the legislative authority. Software at the state of Minnesota almost always sucks. So if we could address that, I would appreciate it.
Deputy Commissioner Blissenbach.
Great, thank you for that clarification, Representative Nash. So I can speak to DLI. Included in our fiscal note was a cost for an upgrade to our current case management system within our labor standards unit. What that would do is allow for the types of complaints that would come in for violations of this of the requirements outlined in this bill. It would allow for our system to track that, allow us to open investigations and in related specifically to these items, which we currently do not enforce. So it would be a system upgrade to allow for tracking and investigations to happen. It would also cover user licenses for the additional staff that would come on board at Labor and Industry to enforce the requirements of this bill.
Representative Nash.
Well, Madam Chair, I take great solace in the fact that this bill is going nowhere in the Senate, so we don't have to deal with it. But I'll move on to speaking about the Senate. Representative Olson, in your litany of places that you were going to appropriate money for, I maybe didn't hear the Senate. And I'm just wondering if that is a move to create a unicameral. I didn't hear that you were appropriating money for the Senate to handle this as well. And I have one last comment.
Vice Chair Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I appropriated what was in our fiscal note. So what came through as costs. So that was not a decision on my part in any way, it was simply reading through the fiscal note and making sure we appropriated accordingly.
Representative Nash.
So if I heard that right, there is no appropriation for the Senate. So unicameral it is. And Madam Chair, my final comment is this is just tone deaf. So we are going to apply, if this bill were to become law, and it won't, which is great, but if this were to become law, we're going to burden Minnesota companies with an unbelievable cost. All the while, the House DFL, in contravention to their own governor and the motion of their colleagues in the Senate, is not moving on the UI bill that sits on our floor. We heard last week on Friday from Representative Winkler that you're holding it hostage on purpose. You are holding it hostage on purpose. And yet you bring this bill, which will laden costs to business owners across the state, and you proclaim how wonderful a bill this is. So I just think, I'm not sure, and since I can't question motives, but I'm not sure how one looks at themselves in the mirror while advocating for this bill, all the while purposefully going out of their way to do nothing to help the UI issue that our employers are right now facing. It is on the horizon. We have heard from the department that this has to happen. Today is the last day in order for it to happen in an orderly manner. So I'm baffled why we are doing this bill and we are doing nothing to help businesses across the state. It is unconscionable what's going on. So as you cast your yes votes for this, I hope that you'd begin thinking about those businesses that you are going to stick it to again if you were to pass this bill. Thank you.
Okay, I do not see any further questions or discussion. Vice Chair Olson, any closing comments before we vote?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. And I'll just remind people and end on this note that, again, there are 932,000 Minnesotans that don't have access to a single paid day, hour off during a pandemic. And these are often the people we call heroes. And so this is a past due bill, and I just welcome your support.
Thank you. So Olson, Vice Chair Olson, motion is before us. Ms. Anna, please take the roll. Aye.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Representative Garofalo?
Garofalo, no.
Representative Albright?
Albright, no.
Right, no. Representative Becker-Finn?
Aye.
Becker-Finn, aye. Representative Bernardi?
Aye.
Bernardi, aye. Representative Eklund?
Aye.
Eklund, aye. Representative Hansen?
Aye.
Hansen, aye. Representative Hassan?
Hassan, aye.
Hassan, aye. Representative Hertas?
Hertas, no.
Hertas, no. Representative Hornstein?
Hornstein, aye.
Hornstein, aye. Representative Johnson?
Johnson, no.
Johnson, no. Representative Creshaw?
Creshaw, no.
Creshaw, no. Representative Liebling?
Liebling, aye.
Liebling, aye. Representative Lilly?
Lilly, aye.
Lilly, aye. Representative Mariani?
Mariani, aye.
Mariani, aye. Representative Marquardt?
Marquardt, aye.
Marquardt, aye. Representative Miller?
Miller, no.
Miller, no. Representative Nash?
No.
Nash, no. Representative Nelson?
Nelson, aye.
Nelson, aye. Representative Noor?
Noor, aye.
Noor, aye. Representative O'Neill?
O'Neill, no.
O'Neill, no. Representative Pulaski?
Pulaski, aye.
Pulaski, aye. Representative Petersburg?
Petersburg, no.
Petersburg, no. Representative Pinto?
Pinto, aye.
Pinto, aye. Representative Schumacher?
Schumacher, no.
Schumacher, no. Representative Schultz?
Schultz, aye.
Schultz, aye. Representative Scott? Representative Scott? Representative Sundin?
Sundin, aye.
Sundin, aye. And Representative Scott? That is 18 ayes and 10 nays.
So there have been 18 ayes and 10 nays. The motion prevails, and House File 41, as amended, is recommended for placement on the General Register. Thank you, Vice Chair Olson. Well, members, that concludes our business for the day. I want to thank you for your work today. And this meeting is,
Madam Chair.
Before we go, I see you, Representative O'Neill. Yes, go ahead.
Madam Chair, today really exemplifies why we should not be meeting at 9 a.m. on a Monday morning. That amendment, the Greenman Amendment, did not come through until nearly 6 o'clock on Friday to our members. And our staff is still trying to do things remotely. Many of us live in Greater Minnesota and are trying to make our way into St. Paul so that we can be in person for session. And so meeting at 9 a.m. on a Monday morning is really problematic. It's if you want transparency for the public, if you want us to participate in a full way, I would ask you to move it back to our normal time of 10:30 so that we can process what we need to process. Our staff has time to review things that have changed. and we can actually have a full and transparent and honest discussion. I would ask you to please move this time back to 10:30 so those of us in Greater Minnesota can get in a timely fashion and participate fully.
Yeah, you know, Representative O'Neill, in many ways, right, I agree with you. And we're kind of adapting to, you know, the changes, circumstances that falls on Ways and Means. So if we need to move a bill out quickly, we'll probably be meeting early. But I would expect that we'll get back to our regular time moving forward. So I want to just thank you for bringing that forward. And we're definitely adapting, moving. But I do expect us to move back to our regular time. So members, again, that concludes our business for today. Thank you for your work today. And this meeting is adjourned.